Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture. With your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection. Tonight's guest has dozens of print, ebooks, and audiobooks published in the genres of historical fiction, historical romance, Amish romance, and devotional, to name a few. His latest projects are an ebook series, which are a new take on the Arthurian legends. The first volume of the Name of the Hawk series, titled Legion, was released last year. And recently, the first part of Volume 2, titled The Holy Grail, was released by author Murray Pura, who is on the phone with us from his home office in Pincher Creek, Alberta, to talk to us tonight. But before we get to our interview, let's listen to You Are With Us from the We Won't Stop CD by Alan Froese.
See trouble in this world, we will know pain, but there's mercy for our struggles. There is strength found in your name. You don't ask us to simply pretend that all is fine when we feel that we
interview with Murray Pura. Good evening, Murray.
Yes, hi. Nice to talk to you, Robert.
Thank you. Now, I was looking at doing some background research on you and that, and your website said you started writing stories when you were 8 and 9.
I know.
Yeah. How did that sort of lead to the point where you're now doing this full time?
Well, that was writing stories for my mother, I remember. It was she happened to like a television show at the time about a TV lawyer. So I decided I had an audience, so I made up stories. Of course, they weren't very sophisticated or complex, but in any case, I wrote them on 3x5 index cards, stapled them together, made a cover and everything on that. Of course, mother said, well, this is great, this is fine, and away we went, and I would just write these stories. But then that led to more complicated stories through my teen years and writing, I know, about Canadian history, historical novels, about all kinds of different things, and that just kept going. I became a Christian in 1967, and that affected, of course, my writing, and it changed everything, just in terms of some of the dynamic involved. My first story ever published, in terms of really published and being paid for, was when I was about 14, 15 in there, and there used to be a pamphlet handed out to churches in Canada, United States, called Teen Power, and they took submissions, and I submitted a story, and they accepted it, and I think they paid me about $50. I still have the check stub for that, and so that just, you know, that was kind of the, hey, I can really do this. I actually have an audience bigger than my mother or a few good friends who will say nice things. So that's how that all started, and from there it just mushed. I mean, there's, you know, there's a lot to say about the stepping stones and this happened here and that happened there, but that's kind of really where it kept taking off.
Well, when did you sort of make that decision that you were going, this was going to be your career? Like, I'm going to be a writer, and
I kept doing it all the time. I mean, I have two master's degrees, one from Acadia, one from Regent in Vancouver, but I, you know, and a BA, of course, from Providence, but I was always writing, even when I was doing that. So even though I could see that I was going to be doing pastoring and speaking, I was always writing on the side. I was always, you know, making my stories. And I remember submitting some to professors that were favorites of mine. You know, J.I. Packer knew I was writing. Lauren Wilkinson knew I was writing. And I'd give them some stories, and they started getting published in Crux magazine, which came out of Regent, and that led to a lot of other things. But I think along that way, I said, no, this is something I'm always going to be doing. And I used to take as my role model other Christians who had both been, you know, pastors and writers, you know, Gerard Manley Hopkins, in a way, a poet like that, but also John Donne, George Herbert. Even C.S. Lewis, in a way, though he wasn't really a pastor, yet he was a Christian who was writing and doing something else at the same time. He was a lecturer. So that kind of was always there. And then there was a big breakthrough in about 5-6 years ago now. I mean, I'd already published in the United States. I'd worked with Harper One San Francisco. I'd worked with Richard Foster on his Life with God Bible. It used to be called the Renovare Bible. But I wrote a book that was the first time a piece of fiction was published in the American market. And that was with Barber. And that opened up all kinds of doors. All of a sudden, my agent, who lives in North Carolina, had all kinds of offers to write for different publishers. And I think that's when I said, okay, I'm going to, for now, I prayed about it, thought about it, and I said, I'm going to step away from pastoral ministry for now and just focus on the writing. And that, because of that breakthrough in that market, which gave me a much bigger audience and the means to have the kind of royalties that you could, you know, you could actually have a bit of a living on.
Well, one of the things I've been finding is as I was looking through the list of your publication, the books have been published, and you mentioned yourself. You've done historical novels. You worked on the Renovare, the Bible, and things like that. You've written in a lot of different genres. Is there one particular genre that you prefer to another?
If somebody put me in a desert island and said, "Well, you're only going to get to write three books," you know, and you can choose your genre, and even though I find it helpful to change genres just to refresh your mind. I like literary fiction and historical fiction the best, yeah. So in other words, basically the novel that won the historical novel of the year for the Word Guild in 2012 in Toronto, that's part of a series, and the first book in that series was a finalist for the Cubsar Literary Award, Zoe, and then The White Birds of Morning. That kind of genre, when I'm doing historical fiction, combined with literary fiction. And you know, somebody says, well, what's literary fiction? Well, literary fiction is kind of, you know what I mean? It's just, you take it higher in terms of complexity, and you take it deeper in terms of depth than the other genres. You're expecting your reader to go farther with you, and not to be upset if you have multiple characters or very deeply ingrained plots. It's more like writing Les Miserables, right, than writing, say, a mystery thriller or a romance.
In doing that and in looking at those, are there any writers out there that you find yourself being heavily influenced by, or that you've looked to as an influence in that particular genre?
Oh, for sure. When I was young, you know, my brother, 5 years older than me, but he's a painter, he's an artist. He taught at the University of Manitoba for his career, but he was always painting and selling paintings and displaying paintings, as well as doing neoclassical music. But in any case, he would say, well, you know, you should probably read this guy, and he'd give me Ernest Hemingway. And I can remember reading The Old Man and the Sea when I was young, or The Green Hills of Africa. And that had enormous influence. And then I think a lot of Rudy Weave had a big influence on me, his writing. So did a number of our Canadian writers. Not so much Margaret Lawrence did. And among the Americans, the writers like William Faulkner, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and the poets have had amazing influence. Simile and metaphor is really important to me in my writing. I want it to be poetry in motion as well as good prose. And so poets have always mattered, like Robert Frost, like Carl Sandburg, like Langston Hughes, and on and Gerard Manley Hopkins and Herbert and Dunn and just that colorful use of language. So those have been amazing. And of course the King James Bible, even though I myself, in when I preach, I use modern translations because I'm very concerned about communicating. But just in terms of the richness of the language of the King James, and I was in theater for quite a few years, and that affected it too. All those influences coming together, I think, may take you into a place where, for me, it's not only telling the story, but it's telling it well and making the language come alive.
Well, looking at our time, I think we need to take a quick break, and when we do, we'll come back and continue our conversation with author Murray Pura. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM.
Redeemer of our hearts, we declare your endless worth, our God, how great you are. Nothing, nothing in this world can take us from your love. No one, no one is as great as you.
Back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to We Won't Stop, the title track from Alan Froh's We Won't Stop CD. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Murray Pura. Murray, one of your latest works is an ebook series. You started last year with The Name of the Hawk as Volume 1, and now you've got Volume 2 of that series coming out, which is a unique take on the Arthurian legends. Where did you come up with this whole idea?
Well, you know, the Middle Ages has always fascinated me, and I guess we can kind of start the Middle Ages around 500, 600 in there. I've always been interested in Celtic Christianity, the Christianity that existed prior to the influence of Rome, what you had in what we now call Great Britain, you know, and Ireland. So I think there was an idea, you know, I'd like to write a story about, and I remember the first idea was, well, you know, you have, for instance, Lloyd C. Douglas wrote the novel The Robe, which became a film with Richard Burton. You know, I was looking for parts to do with Christ's passion, and I think I've read something about the spear that was used to pierce his side, and of course, the cup at the Last Supper, the Holy Grail, and that, of course, is the big part of the Galahad and the Arthurian legend. So I said, okay, I'm going to start with Galahad had a twin that no one knew about, and a midwife spirited him away, and he was born the same time as Galahad, in the closed room where the midwife was taking care of everything. You know, Lancelot wasn't allowed in, etc., and then she put him in a basket and spirited him away, and now we're going to have this other boy growing up whose God hand is on, but no one knows. And I said, instead of starting with the Grail legend, which is the famous legend, I said, I had never really read anything about anyone trying to seek the true cross. You know, the loss, the loss of the true cross. And so that became the kind of core for this story. There's two brothers that don't know that the other one exists, and certainly the one who was spirited away and raised in poverty and obscurity has no idea that his father is Sir Lancelot, or that he's somehow connected, to Galahad and the Knights of the Round Table and Arthur, and he thinks all that is nonsense anyway. To him, that's just stories. He's living on an island off the coast of Britain. He's raised in a monastery, but the more Celtic monastics, you could be married and have children before Rome's influence. So that's the kind of environment he's in. And in terms of the Arthurian legend, it's just stories. It's just, it's make-believe, and it's fun, but it's not real. And then as the story progresses, and as he is on this quest to find the true cross, his paths cross with Galahad, though they don't know who the other is, and they're really actually enemies to begin with, or think they are. And so that's where we go with that, but I wanted to get in there on a unique take on the legend, and of course he finds out that in the story, of course he realizes, well, the Arthurian legend, there really is something. These people are real. There may have been legends made up about them, but there are some real people here. And so we just go with that, and that's the whole first series, them on the quest for the true cross.
And of course part two, which you just started, the first part just came out early this month. You're looking at the Grail. You're going into the quest for the Grail.
Right. Now him and Galahad are together. They're at Camelot, and then so it's just like, the Grail story has been told many ways. It's been told comically. It's been told seriously. It's told, there's so many films and spins off it. And for me, my spin is that we're going to have these twins, the seeking the Grail together, not just Galahad finding it, but with the help of his brother Hawk, and everything that goes from there. So, yes, exactly. They're doing the Grail now, but of course they'll be doing the legend. And I still try to stay true. I mean, I mentioned the people that are part of it and the visions of the Grail and the clashes that they're going to have to deal with the Black Knight and things like that. But you try and deal with a little bit of a twist. And I like bringing in the Christianity of that age. The language and prayers are very rich in the Celtic tradition, extremely poetic and powerful. And I like to bring that as kind of a river running through the whole thing, that it's not just a story. These people really do believe that there was a Christ who held that Grail. They really do believe there was a Christ who died on that cross and rose again. It's not just myth to them. Like an Arthurian thing, it's real, and I like bringing that in.
And you also sort of have this compare and contrast situation between the Roman tradition and the Celtic tradition, with Galahad representing in some cases the Roman tradition coming out of the Arthur and the King's Court and in Britain, and then Hawk that sort of represents that Celtic. That Celtic tradition, and that kind of gives and ultimately in the end, and try not to do any spoilers here, but there has to be a melding of the two traditions to really make some of the things happen that need to happen.
Yes, and of course that's in real life, that's what did happen, and you had Patrick who was Rome eventually, basically forging so much of the spirituality that became known as the Celtic Christian Church after its early beginnings and primitive beginnings. So, but yes, yeah, definitely Galahad and Hawk accept becoming brothers and be friends. And as you say, the spirituality of both has to come together to fight the evil and the darkness and the demonic that they have to deal with to not only find the cross, but also in the second series, the Grail, for sure.
Now, you've chosen this, you've done this interestingly. You chose, first off, an ebook format, but you also chose to release different parts at different times. Like, I think it's April, May, June, and July is what's happening with part two, with the second volume in the series. Why that particular format, which is almost a throwback to some of the way novels were done in Victorian times, where, they would serialize the novel in a publication, and then ultimately you would have this whole novel put together.
Yeah, well, as you say, Charles Dickens did it that way. Arthur Conan Doyle did that with Holmes, you could even bring it into America and Canada, and in terms of the Westerns, some of the way Westerns were serialized in the 30s and 40s and things like that. And that's basically something not so much that I thought of, but publishers are doing and have been. And not just a publisher I'm working with here who's doing this one, who's based in Philadelphia, or near Philadelphia, but other groups have done this. It's like the serialization of the Victorian times, or it's like watching a television show. Okay, next week it's this, next week it's that, and that's basically what it is. You're getting it come out, and people. And actually, when I first started doing this, it was done with Amish fiction, Amish romantic fiction, and they would have it done that way. Here's part one, and it would be like 7,000 to 10,000 words long, and then another month later, another one would come. But I did, just like you, I found it rather ironic that here we are in this modern age, and because of the e-book revolution, we're doing some of the same things that were done well over 100 years ago in terms of releasing the fiction. But people seem to like it this way. They get these 99-cent chapters, and they like to read it and look forward to the next one. So I think that's a human nature thing. There's still a part of human nature that doesn't have to have the whole story set before them. They kind of like a serialization. Some wait. There's no question. Some say, well, I'm going to get your series when it's all done. I'm going to have it all there. Just like somebody watching a television show will wait for the whole set to come out on DVD. Then they'll watch it. But others watch it week by week on TV. So I guess both are served that way. And then eventually, if they want to, they put it into print. But I must say, Robert, and I'm sure you're well aware of this, print is becoming less and less significant in the publishing industry. And I know that a number of my series that have been both print and ebook, they're tending to focus more and more and more on the ebook, because that's where they make the sales. And, it's less expensive for people to buy, less expensive to produce. And it's very popular, and it's surpassed half the sales now, and it keeps on increasing. So I think print books are going to become our vinyl over the next decade.
Mm-hmm. Well, we need to take one final break, and then we're going to wrap up our conversation with author Murray Pura. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM.
Search me, God. See beyond the surface. Know my heart. See the hidden places. Test my thoughts. Remove any wrong way in me. Search me, God.
Arts Connection, you've been listening to Search Me from the We Won't Stop CD by Alan Froese. I'm your host, Robert White. We're going to wrap up our conversation with Murray Pura. Just before break, we were talking about the fact that things are tending to go more towards ebook and that. Looking at that, and especially with In the Name of the Hawk being strictly an ebook series, what's been the reaction to the series?
Oh, well, you know, you have a lot of people that it's funny in the general public, you know, in America they obviously use the term CBA for the Christian Book Association, ABA for the American Book Association, ABA being more your secular or general market for everyone, CBA of course being more geared to the Christian or evangelical market, and in that market you find there's a growing interest in the fantasy genre, but it's still not as popular as the Amish genre, which is one of the biggest ones, or romance genre, as it were. Even though some of the best writers in it have Christian beliefs, you know, Tolkien and Lewis, Narnia and Lord of the Rings, Hobbit, fantasy, and yet in the evangelical Christian public, it's not as popular a genre, but I have had decent success with The Hawk and people saying, when is it? I mean, when I said to the publisher, what do you want to do this year in terms of you and I, the first thing is, no, you need to do another Hawk. So that tells me that there was interest there. But in the general public, fantasy is a much bigger thing, far, far bigger thing. And if you can kind of cross over, which you can a little bit with The Hawk, and have readers that are from, you know, from the general public, it certainly helps in terms of interest for the series.
Well, just wrapping up, where can people find out more about you and your books?
Well, my website, as you mentioned earlier, it's www.murraypura.com, and that shows all the books where you try to keep up to date because there is a lot of writing. I have a Facebook page, Murray Pura Writing. People are welcome to like and interact there, and I talk about my books there and do giveaways from there as well. And so those are probably the two main things in terms of that, just in terms of connecting with that. And of course, Amazon, have an Amazon author page, and as things move more towards, you know, as all our brick and mortar stores close, I was astonished to see the Last Blessing store close here in Calgary a couple of months ago, and as all the brick and mortars began to change, fade away, most of the sales will be online, and Amazon and others, but Amazon is one of the key players in that.
Well, Murray, thanks very much for your time tonight.
Thank you, Robert. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you for listening to Arts Connection tonight, and thank you to my guest, Murray Pura. If you miss a broadcast or want to hear it again, look for archive programs on our website at salawministries.ca. That's S-E-L-A-W ministries.ca. And be sure to tune in next week for a look where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, a production of Salaw Ministries, email robert@salawministries.ca. Follow us on Twitter @Salaw13. Look for the Arts Connection page on Facebook or check the Arts Connection blog at rdaleleslie.wordpress.com. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.